Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Live Your Music. I'm your host, Margo Joy Denader, and I am excited to have Robert Berry as my guest today. He's back on the show. It's been almost a year since he was on last. So much has happened in the last year. And during the show today, you get to hear about Robert's new album, 3.2, Third Impression, and you'll get to hear two songs from the album during the show. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, Margo. How are you?
I am excited to have you back on the show and to talk to you about all that's happened since you were on last.
Yeah, it's been a very productive last year for me in so many ways, and there's so many other things that we could talk about, but who wants to talk about that stuff? Let's talk about being productive and still making the most of your time no matter what's going on, you know?
Exactly, and that's what I've found is that the people that know they're creative, because we're all creative, and just some people don't realize they are, but the people who know they're creative, most of the ones that I know anyway, have been using the time creatively and to create more things, and I know that's for sure true about you.
You know what's interesting? I have this friend who's very creative, great guitar player. The guy is just a genius level guy, and he's going to start a new album, and I felt the urge to call him and say, you know, I have a technique I use where I'm not always trying to perfect everything when I start. I just sort of play, or I write the words with reckless abandonment, and I let it flow out, like flow writing, you know. I do that on the guitar, I do it on the drums, and then I sit back and I go, well, if I would have played the right notes there, that was really good. So I let the creativity kind of explode, and then I hone it in and learn it and replay it. But it's the creativity that's spontaneous. And a lot of times people get caught up in sort of judging their own creativity or their own work or whatever it is, where they get a writer's block or something. I just let it fly, you know? I just let it fly out, and then it, I like to say, it's easier to fix an idea than to get one, right? So
Exactly. That's one of my favorite reminders that you had told me years and years ago, and I have it up on with some other quotes to remind me of that, yeah, I mean, getting the ideas, just put the ideas somewhere, you know, and then you can combine them and you can magnify them and minify them, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Change them, play with them, you know. But, yeah, that's so true. The worst thing is just to sit there in front of a blank page or a blank computer screen and say, okay, I have to make it perfect. Right now.
Well, that's the roadblock right there, isn't it? You can make it perfect once you get the idea that you want to refine, but if you don't get past the perfection, the idea is lost.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true.
I don't know if this happens to you. I'll wake up sort of disarmed and, oh, I got an idea. And if I write it down, it comes out, I can put it down. Or right when I'm going to sleep at night, I go, oh, I got this idea. And I think that's because we're sort of shutting down our defense mechanisms, you know, we're waking up or going to sleep. It's just us and ourselves and our mind, and it's turning off. But if I don't write it right down, even if I'm awake for five more minutes, it's gone. What was that I was going to write down again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is so true. The palest pencil is better than my memory.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Oh, that is so true. I remember I took a class on creativity years and years ago actually it was a workshop at a conference, and the guy was saying that the edges of consciousness, just what you were saying, that's when most of the creative ideas really do show up, and you're right, you have to write them down. So,
yeah.
You know, Wayne Dyer used to love to say, quote, I can't remember who did it originally, but he would say, the morning breeze has secrets to tell you. Get up and write them down.
That's good.
Yeah, and he would wake up, he said, a lot of times at 3:13 in the morning, and he'd get up and write them down. And every once in a while, I'll wake up at 3:13 in the morning, and I'll go, oh, my gosh, the morning breeze is going, get up and write them down. And it's so funny because every time I do that, instead of tossing and turning, I end up going, wow, I'm really glad I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creativity, like I say, everybody has it. You just have to be able to let it fly and let it out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so let's hear about this new album, which is due to come out on February 12th, and I am so excited to get it.
You know, I have to tell you, I have a bunch coming up, but I've done about 25 interviews now, because they always start, with the top magazines and things of the industry, because they want them to get things first. And what's been exciting for me, the rules have changed. It was really received well, and I was worried about it finishing up after Keith's death. And I just wasn't sure what I had and if it was good enough, and I certainly wanted to honor his memory, and I wanted to put out something really good to show people, hey, this guy still had it. He was happy to listen to these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the response was incredible. That's why the record company asked me to do a follow-up, which I didn't want to do a third three album, which is what I consider Third
mm-hmm.
Impression. I only had one song I had written with Keith that I hadn't used. So what I did is they bugged me and said, no. They said, the rules of change did really good. You have to do a follow-up. You owe that to the people. Oh, geez. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. If I can write seven songs that I think Keith would be proud to work on, would have liked, and I feel like I could do them justice within the three format, then I'll finish up the last song that Keith and I worked on, which is called Never, and it's almost 9 minutes long. 2 seconds short, it's 9 minutes, so it's a big piece of music.
Wow.
And it was too much of a big piece to put on the rules of change. It just wouldn't have worked. There was enough music on that album
right.
for the ears and for the meaning and everything. It was a sad time for me, and what lyrics came out, it just seemed to work. So Never wasn't made to be on that album. But I said, then I will finish Never, and we'll see what you think. So I got the seven songs, and sort of like the rules that changed, I felt like, you know, I was channeling Keith's energy, his memory, his whatever it is that made us do what we did together. Maybe he was guiding me. I'm not really the kind of person that believes that they're Jesus in the clouds, like he looks like a cloud, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm a more... I'm a spiritual guy, but more down to earth about that kind of stuff. But I always feel like he's guiding me in these albums, and he's with me. So I got it done. The record company said, oh, this is tremendous. And I thought, oh, geez, sort of like the rules have changed. I don't know what I have here. And I checked it with a couple people. One of them was going to do the liner notes with Anil Prasad, who you've had on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, Anil pulls no punches. He says exactly what he wants to say. He doesn't worry what anybody's going to think. And I'm going to get between the eyes from this guy. And he said,
yeah.
No, Robert, this is a worthy follow-up. I said, really? He goes, no, I think people will be really pleased with it. And he goes, I think Never is going to garner a lot of talk in the progressive rock community and could be the best thing since Desi LaVita on the first album for the real Keith Emerson fans. I went, wow. So, okay, well, it was nice. Well, I've done 25 interviews. 15 to 20, I don't remember exactly now, have said, this album is better than The Rules Have Changed. And that really took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting to hear that at all, ever. I was hoping to hear, well, you did a good follow-up. This is as good as the last album. But I like some things better, whatever it is, you know. And they're really liking it because they get a link from Frontiers Records when they review the album.
Yeah.
They're a magazine, whatever they are, you know. So they actually hear the whole album, which only 25 people have heard it, you know, along with Anil.
Yeah, Anil. I love the foreword that he wrote in the booklet. I've seen the PDF of proof of the booklet that goes in the album. And, I loved reading that, what he wrote, and then also about the different songs and seeing the lyrics for all the songs. And It's so interesting to two of the songs obviously I've heard before, because you have the videos that they Frontiers released for A Bond of Union and Fond Farewell. But
yeah.
I haven't heard the other songs yet, and it's really interesting just reading the lyrics to the songs without having heard them. So,
well, I did that with you for two reasons. First of all, nobody's seen this booklet, you know, and I thought I wanted to give you something special for your show to, so you could talk about it. But also, I have some songs on here that could be construed as negative, and you know I'm a very positive person.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, Margo reads some of these lyrics. It might not hit her as negative as to hear this sort of powerful music along with it that might sound a little daunting or whatever, and I'll see what she thinks. So you haven't said that you have a couple of negative songs on there yet, so maybe I slipped by you.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm curious what Killer of Hope, for example, would be about, and The Devil of Liverpool, you know, at some of those. But which one is the one that you thought was going to be the most negative?
Well, The Killer of Hope, really.
Just that
title, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find, I got the booklet up, but, you know, you read the words, and it's kind of about getting through that, you know. There's
right.
all this stuff that's thrown at us all the time. So, I don't know, I'd have to really...
Well, you know, the thing is that The Killer of Hope, it's like, it's interesting because hope after last year with the pandemic, and then also the issues that we've had with Dudley's health, has been, you know, the word hope has such new meaning for me now compared to what it ever has before. And so the idea of hope getting killed is like, you know, that's what was happening to a lot of people, I think, is that their hope was getting killed. And
you know, what I really wrote it about was the killer of hope, because I'm big on feeding the homeless and finding people homes. That's why I'm so down on California in general, which is where we live, because we are the seventh largest economy in the world, and we have these terrible homeless encampments. If California can't figure it out, nobody can, and we should be able to figure it out. So these people don't have the money, and they can't climb out of that hole because they don't have a ladder, whatever it is. But the killer hope is really about, you know, money. It takes money to make things happen, even to feed people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see we have so much of it here in California. And we also have big dreams to do all these things to help people, but it doesn't get done, and it just drives me nuts. Like I say, if California can't do it, nobody can do it, because we're the seventh largest economy in the world. That's a lot of money. The government gets a lot of taxes, you know. So that's what that song's really about. It's not about hope in general. It's about serving hope, I guess I want to say, you know. There's a way to give people hope, but it always costs money. That's just the way it is. I don't care if you're in Italy and Germany and the United States, it costs money to take care of people. And we have plenty of it here. Anyway, I don't want to get too heavy about it. But so it's not about the hope part of it. It's about what makes it tough to bring, to solve that problem. You know, anyway. And, you know, there's that one. I was wondering, you would see the title for The Devil of Liverpool and probably go, okay, what is that about?
You definitely got my curiosity up, there's no doubt. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about
that. That has been the favorite song of four out of the 25 interviews, which I was really surprised about. Really? Oh, cool. Now, and also my manager, it's his favorite song on the album.
Wow. Excuse me. Well, are you going to tell us a little bit about it, or are you going to let us all be curious?
Nah, I got to hang up now. No, you know, it's funny. For the rules that changed, of course, the world was open, and they brought me to London on a press tour. And my publicist over there set me up in this nice room in a hotel, and every hour she had another magazine come in and interview me. I did 10 in one day. It was a long day.
Wow.
And I felt that's the first time since being with Keith and Carl and having our big Geffen album that an album of mine has gotten that much attention. I was like, wow, this is really great. People are taking this seriously. They want to know what it's about because Keith was involved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebecca was with me, and I said, you know, I need to unwind. And tomorrow, let's go on a straight tourist Beatles thing in a taxi cab. Let's do the most mindless thing where they're saying, here's Strawberry Fields, and here's where George Harrison grew up. And so we did it.
Uh-huh.
But we got this guy, he was really an old guy, and he grew up like on the same block or around George Harrison. He knew all about him. And as we're going to these typical Beatle things, he was telling us stories about the old days. And then he also told me and Rebecca a story about somebody from, I don't know, the 1800s, whatever, called the Devil of Liverpool, who was a loan shark, and everybody's afraid of him. And, you know, the parents used to tell this story about the loan shark and the Devil of Liverpool. And he went on about it, so I wrote that down on my phone. I said, oh, I love that title, The Devil of Liverpool. Oh, wow. So I came home, and I tried to research it. I couldn't find anything online about the Devil of Liverpool, only a couple little things here and there. And
uh-huh.
They didn't really say much, but I had this story this guy in the cab told me. And I forget what the cab tour was, of Penny Lane tours or Strawberry Fields tours or something Beatles tours, you know, what are the Magical Mystery Tour, I don't know. But this guy, this thing resonated in my mind, so I wrote this song. And I honestly sort of wrote the lyrics on my phone after the title, and it wasn't a song until I started working on this album, and I thought, I'm going to try to make that into a piece of music to use for this. And that's how it came about. And so many things that I hear or see, you know, there's another song that I had actually played for Keith, well, 10 years ago, and asked him to get involved before we started redoing the three stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Emotional Trigger. And I was so tired. I really like watching the news. I get song ideas. I write down, like this Devil of Liverpool thing, I write them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to watch the news all the time, and it was getting worse and worse. And some of my favorite shows, like 60 Minutes and 2020, all they talked about was a husband murdering his wife or a wife murdering her husband. I'm going, oh, my God, every week, that's all I see. It's really pulling on, you know, my emotional strings because it's depressing. I don't want to watch anymore. And then I thought, The Emotional Trigger. Wow, I said, there's a title for a song. So I wrote this song. And I sent it to Keith, and we talked about it. And I said, Keith, I'd love for you to do this with me. I don't know what we'd use it for, but he played great jazz piano.
Mm-hmm.
After he got back to me, and I think I mailed it to him at that time because he wasn't getting music on his phone and stuff. He wasn't that into technology on computers and everything. He
mm-hmm.
called me the next day. He goes, you don't want me playing that song. What a great piece of music, and the way you're singing it and the way you're playing it. The piano part, he goes, it's perfect the way it is. You should do more of this. So I just sort of left it at that point. I thought, well, I would have liked to have done it with him, but what a nice compliment for him to say how much he liked it and the whole style. So when this album was being worked on, I thought, you know, Keith liked that song. I'm going to put that on here, as different as it is. And it's a real jazzy piece. Totally jazzy piano, string bass, sang with almost no vibrato.
I like that kind of music, but I'm
yeah.
feeling I don't really like that song.
I think you'll love the sound of the song.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of complaining about the news wanting to take the least common denominator that the public seems to like, and it's always murder or school shooting. Or, I mean, these are all things I hate to even say the words. And then a week later, people forget about it, and they're on to the next murder, you know. So that's one of those commentaries by me that, you know, maybe it's not negative, but there's a lot of negativity in the world, which we need to stamp out. So, anyway,
well, you
there's
know,
that
I
one.
I think the thing is, though, Robert, about this is, like, you know, a few times lately, Dudley's complained to me and goes, Margo, you're being so negative. which, you know, I hate that because it's like one of the ways he can really get me upset because I love to be positive. But
right.
There's been
yeah.
so much stuff going on in the world the last year or so, especially, that, you know, it really is easy to catch some of that that's happening, and then have to work your way back up the emotional scale. And, you know, granted, I have a positive attitude, but that doesn't mean I don't notice that there's bad things that happen in the world. And so there's times where I have to use the tools I know to go from the down in the bottom part of the scale back up. And
That's true. And a lot of people can't do that. Of course, we have a lot more suicides, which I don't really want to talk about either, but that's the bad news. To me, the really bad news, the reason I want to put emotional trigger on here, is half of what you see on the news and read and hear totally either never happens or is totally false. So that's the emotional trigger, too. They're playing on our emotions to drag us into things. And a lot of it's not even true. Supposedly there was something called coronavirus for the last year. Have you heard of that? I don't even know what that is. Anyway, you know I'm joking.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It's and the thing is they repeat it over and over and over again.
Oh, God, I know.
We have an old friend of Dudley's that's still a friend of ours. I won't mention names, but because we're on live show right now. But anyway, she was horrified a few years ago when she found out Dudley and I don't watch the news. And we haven't for years. She watches it like 24 hours a day. And, you know, even when we've gone over to her house for dinner, she has the news on in the background over there.
Well, there's an angry person, I'll tell you that right now, because they're pushing all her buttons one way or another, right?
Yeah, now that you mention it, I hadn't really thought of her as angry. But, yeah, she does get angry about it, and she gets all upset about all these things. And these things are all in what I wrote about in my book, The Circle of Concern. It's everything out there that we care about, but we can't do anything about. And I've been having to constantly remind myself, circle of control, Margo, circle of control. Get back into the things that you can control, you know, like your focus, what you do, what you don't do, what you choose to watch, what you choose to listen to, what you choose to think even, you know, and to believe for sure. I mean, you were talking about some of the things not even being true. Some of the news shows just want to get more ratings, and it takes people like her, they want to make sure nothing's bad's going to be happening, so they're watching it. And she's going, well, what if something bad happens? I'm going, you know what? Someone will tell me. You know?
If it's really bad and it's, you know, going to change the world, you'll hear about it in many different ways, you know. And
no, I know. You'll hear about it on the internet. You'll hear about it from friends. You'll hear about it from all sorts of people. So, yeah.
I think you'll experience it for real, because I have a lot of friends that I don't even want to talk to them about anything but music. I just don't want to, you know. I don't want to talk about that stuff. That's politics and bad stuff and all that. That's for other people. Let them dig their own hole, right?
Definitely.
Yep, there's another song that you might think is negative. I have a song called What Side You're On here. And one of my big philosophies for myself is if you and I disagree on something, I need to at least understand why you think that's true or the way you think. And I can say, well, I totally don't agree with that, but I at least have to understand, why is Margo so positive? Well, it's her whole life, her book, everything is about being positive. And, well, I don't agree with that. You can't be positive all the time. Then I have a reason to say that. But if I just go, well, you're positive all the time, that's stupid. Well, no, I got to understand what you and why you are the way you are if I want to have my own opinion. That's honestly what side you're on. It's not about taking sides. It's about understanding both sides. And you can take your own side. That's no problem. But there's none of that going on. So that's a little bit, it's not negative at all, I don't think. But that's my philosophy. I need to understand why you believe what you believe. If I'm going to disagree and have a right to express my opinion, which I want everybody to get along. I don't like confrontation.
Yeah, me too.
I'm an easygoing
guy. Well, you know, the thing is, Robert, is that I totally agree with you about what learning about why the other people think what they do and why we think what we do, and to realize that, you know, why does it have to be all one way or all the other? You know, why can't we take the best ideas from both, quote, sides and create a really loving, kind, and creative world for us all to live in. You know, that's what I would like to see happen.
You never know what somebody else is going through in their life, and I hear that from Rebecca all the time with the kids. If the kid's not doing their work, if they're angry, if they're nasty to their kids, she goes, you don't know what that kid's going through at home. And luckily, you know, she hasn't been in person with the kids this year, but usually when she is, she takes the time to find out what is going on at home. You know, what's making this kid angry or happy, whatever it is, she gets to know them, because you don't know the other person's experience. I have so many songs on this album that are kind of about the viewpoint of mine that it's funny when I, and you want me to explain the songs, because like Fond Farewell came out and everybody thought I'm saying farewell to three, which I am. This is the last three album. This is the third in the series. They thought, well, it's a fond for, must be for Keith, Fond Farewell. And actually it's the whole thing about it is saying farewell to kindness. And I won't use any bad words, but when you and I were young, we wouldn't even use the S word, you know, shoot, in front of our parents. There's no way. And now our kids use the F word like it's an expression, right? And I don't know if Xander does or not. My son does. My daughter does. Every other kid I know does. And I look at how unkind people are now, and as in saying, I can say shit on your show. That's not a bad word. So as in us not saying shit to our parents, and now my son using the F word, is kindness, the way people are so unkind right now, in 20 years, is that going to be the norm? So that's what that's about. It's about, are we saying goodbye to kindness without even realizing it? Because we need to knock that off. We need to, if nothing else.
I totally agree
kind.
With.
We need to be kind, you know? So that's what that song's about, even though people think it's a fond farewell to Keith and a fond farewell to the three sound and project with this album. I'm fine with that. And, of course, then the record company, I had a video idea. They didn't like it because I'm terrible at making videos. I'm not good with visual concepts for my own songs.
Right.
And
it's
they said,
hard,
well, we don't like that.
Your own
can
song,
we?
I would imagine.
Yeah, I want it to be, you know, Gone with the Wind, and there's no budget for that. So they said, do you mind if we try something? I said, great, if you have a great idea. And they came up with that Last Man on Earth thing, right, saying fond farewell to humankind. The chosen few are up in the spaceship. They left this one guy behind by mistake or who knows why. Spaceship blows up, and he's now like going, oh, my God, I'm alone. Is the fond farewell to humankind. And there, the girl pops up at the end. I thought they did a great job on it. But it has nothing to do with why I wrote the song, but it definitely applies.
Yeah, they did do a really good job on it, and I've watched it a bunch of times. And I think, it's had like 14,000 views so far on YouTube, it says.
I was hoping that I'm trying to think. I can't think of all the songs now. A Bond of Union, the second release, would have had as many. It seems like it's not getting the views that Fond Farewell did. And yeah,
I think I was trying to figure out why that was too, because it's at 6,600 views. But it also was released later. So, you know, there's that. And then there's also the aspect, though, that Fond Farewell is such an unusual video that I think probably a lot of people shared it because they couldn't even believe it. They're going, you got to see this. I can't, you know what I mean, that sort of thing. Because it really makes you think. It really does make you think about what's going on here in the world and what's it going to be like in the future and that sort of thing. But The Bond of Union is such a beautiful song. Oh, my gosh. I have these awesome headphones that Xander gave me that I can listen to from YouTube or Spotify or whatever from my phone, you know, because they're Bluetooth. And I was listening to that song, well, both of them on the headphones. It just blew me away, you know. I mean, it's just so beautiful, so beautiful. Hopefully it'll sound beautiful when I play it today, but you know, I think we need to play A Bond of Union and then talk about that, because I think it's an incredible song and a beautiful song. They're both, I love them both, and it's a different feeling though when you're just listening to the song and instead of seeing all the visuals. So what do you think?
Yeah, and that guy, Bernie, is in the Austrian hills. He did that video to that. It's a beautiful piece of work. I was just blown away that he got the feeling because, you know, I wrote it for my mom when I lost her, but I really put it together for this album so everybody could possibly find their own parents in the song because we never think about the sacrifices. Think about you as a parent, sacrifices you made for your son. You and Dudley made sacrifices in different ways. It was just watching a baseball game, you know, or I think Dudley was the coach of the baseball team
and
stuff.
He was the commissioner for the Ross Valley Little League for a few years.
He loved it, but it's a sacrifice for your kids, and our parents did that in some way for us. And that bond of union when you have a child is so amazing. You don't even think of it because it's not a sacrifice. We didn't sacrifice.
Right.
But when you think about it, I guess it was. So that's why I wrote the song, hoping that everybody
would
find their
parents. Sacrifice, but it's also making a contribution. You know, I've lately been thinking about the word contribution a lot instead of just giving. And making a contribution to how this person grows up, this child grows up, is so huge. My mom was such a, as you know, a huge influence in my life. And Dudley's was in his, and our dads were in their own way, but especially
thanks,
our mom.
Greg. Well, Greg Kinn just walked in the door here.
I think
he brought
him
a whole bunch of CDs. Evidently, he wants a copy of every song he's ever written.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway, I need to play the song. So it's a little over 5 minutes, so I will mute you and you can talk to him for a minute. But think about the words in the song so we can talk about it afterwards, okay?
All right, we'll do.
This is A Bond of Union, Robert Berry, from the new album, 3.2, Third Impression.
There's many lessons in this world we live, but time's so short and wasted minutes never will come back. But those lessons that stay within our hearts, those seeds of wisdom that were planted long ago, before we could know, there were those foundation that was laid beneath my feet, in every day I see it now, it lives inside of me, in the hopes and dreams I find along the way, I feel my destiny, I hear it calling, the word those held warm inside the hills.
That is such a
beautiful
song.
Yeah, that's an important
song
to me.
It's important to me, too. It's just, I love it. Wow.
I think when we talked about Powerful Man in the last album, I think I mentioned this to you, but I always wanted to be my dad. My dad had a band. My mom sang mm-hmm. my dad's band, but he had a band, a big band mm-hmm. at the time. They toured mm-hmm. around. My dad had a music store when I was really little. He had Vox guitars and amps. Mm-hmm. I basically have a music store here at the recording studio. My dad was involved in getting some property and developed. I have some property that I've worked on. And he loved cars. And, you know, I've been through a lot of cars from a Ferrari to now this Tesla Roadster I have. I love cars. I always wanted to be my dad because we have the same likes. But it was my mom who made me who I am. When I wouldn't practice my piano at 8, 9, 10 years old, she's uh-huh. the one that got me to practice. When I was really getting a little bit older, you know, like at 10 and a little tougher, she got the piano teacher to teach me boogie-woogie stuff because that was uh-huh. fun. You know, that was like, oh, that's not classical, and it's a little more rocking, whatever. She always knew. And then when I wanted to sing, she got me a singing teacher who happened to be the president of the music department at San Jose State, and I majored in music at San Jose State eventually. So she really facilitated my life for me to be who I am, the way I am, and mm-hmm. at the quality of whatever it is that I am. I wanted to be my dad, but my mom's the one that I really, she was right behind me the whole time.
Oh,
never
wow.
pushing, just behind me, supporting me. So I had to do something really important, and I felt when I got this song done, mm-hmm. I felt this song was important enough. I also felt that it wouldn't be received well on the album because it was a ballad, and it was kind of mellow. But people have liked it. They've liked it quite a bit. So I feel really good about that.
Well, you know, it's not an upbeat dance song, but it's a song that's a beautiful song. Oh, my gosh, the piano parts in it, and all the music. You blow us away with how you can play so many different instruments. We were just telling, we had West Coast Songwriters San Rafael had our Zoom last night. We're doing it as Songs in Progress, So we each play a song and then talk about the lyrics and things. And we were telling them all about you and about how much fun we have going down to the recording studio and recording songs with you. You make it so much fun, and it's like it's something that could be so scary. Dudley said that a bunch of times, too. In fact, we talked about you on the show last week when he was on, and it's just so true. I mean, as soon as we drive up to the studio, we start smiling. We walk into the studio, and we see you, and we're bringing the guitars in, we start smiling more. And it's like each track, it's so much fun to hear how it all builds into the song. And so when I'm hearing this song or any of your songs now, I'm always thinking about all the different tracks, the love that goes into each track. It's just incredible. But yeah, your mom, I met your mom a couple times, and yeah, she was a special lady. So
yeah, she was a very kind and always up person. She was never down, ever. You know, even after she got mad, okay, I'm done, you know, trying to discipline
the
kids.
Sounds just like my mom. My mom was the same way, you know.
Yeah.
She got mad at us, I think, maybe 3 whole times in my whole life, you know. And then she would dump the gunny sack, and then she was done.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Man, it was a great way to be brought up. I also always knew that I could take chances because my parents, where they didn't force me to do anything, the slightest interest I showed in something, they're right behind me supporting me, and it gives you a foundation to break away and take some chances and know that if you completely fall flat in your face, you have somewhere to go because they'll support you no matter what. And that's something I think that is missing with some of the people that need sort of a little help these days, if it's homeless or whatever, you know. They have nobody to go to, nowhere to go, no financial support, whatever. You know, I'll say no government support because they have tents out there. You know, if it was me, I'd have an area. We have so much land around here, the buildings aren't being used. I'd set them up in something, I don't know, cleaner and more controlled, even though maybe that feels like a prison. I don't know. Some people, even mental illness, you can't stop on that stuff, but a lot of people in Silicon Valley here are just unfortunate because it's so impossible to live financially. And anyway.
I know. Yeah. You've got a big heart. And, well, anyway, we all make our contributions in the way that we can. But, you know, I want to stress that it's so true what you've said about you never know what's going on in people's lives. And, for example, in our lives, you know what's been going on during the last year, but I mean, I don't talk about it to just everybody what's going on. And so, you know, everyone we see has their own challenges. We each have our own problems that we're dealing with. And so I think it's back to kindness, you know, be as kind as you can.
People should
know
that people should know that you and Dudley found a bag with $5 million in it on the street. So it's changed your life. Isn't that what you're talking about?
No, we did not. Talk about news that's not true. I wish it was.
What happens in the news? It was all over the new Channel 7. Darn, I was hoping it was true.
Yeah, well, if it was on the news, it's probably not true. Yeah,
right, exactly.
The best dramas on TV, the news. Okay, can you believe this? We've only got 16 minutes left, which pretty soon will be only 15 minutes left. And I want to play a fond farewell and talk about that, too. So give us a little bit of background that you want to say before that, and then we'll talk about it again after I play the song.
Okay. One of the things that was really important for me if I was going to do this album was half of it I needed to stay true to the three sound. And like I always say that Keith was the sound of three and half the writing. I was the voice of three and half the writing. So we kind of had everything that was necessary to make a three album between us. On this new one, only having one song from Keith, I had to take a little slack on the sound of three, and I wanted half of it to have that sound. Fond Farewell is part of that sound, and I think really came across as something three would have done. On the other hand, about a third of the album is moving toward, you know, I won't do another album of three because I don't have keys to work with. I'm not going to manufacture a whole album. It just isn't right. So I wanted to have a third of this album lead toward what I would do maybe next, what I'm thinking, which is a little bit more like my time in GTR, because I like the perfect blend of guitar and keyboards. And the first song on this album is called Top of the World. It is the perfect blend of guitar and keyboards, but it starts with about a minute of acoustic kind of Celtic guitar stuff, not keyboards at all. And that was to sort of not derail people, but to make them think, huh, what, what's he doing? Then it gets into all the keyboards and all the stuff. So I planned this a certain way, but Top of the World, I'm sorry, Fond Farewell is one of those that I wanted to be true to everything that I felt 3 was and what Keith and I had decided to do, bringing 3.2 back to finish up the 3 trilogy, let's say. So that's,
you know, I'm really glad that you did do this, too. I'm glad you did the Rules of Change. I love that album, totally love that album. And this felt like it needed a completion, though, you know, and this album is oh, I'm so glad you did it. That's all I can
Well,
say.
And the last song that I wrote with Keith is called Never. And there's things about that song that should never be, will never happen, but there will never be another 3 album. This is the final album in that series. And it's a little bittersweet for me because it was the best time of my life. It's some of my favorite music, but I have to do it honestly and without having any more work with Keith, I can't do another one.
Yeah. Well, you know, as much as I love all of your work with 3 and with the 3.2 and all of that, I love all of your music. And you have so many other albums that are wonderful, too. And then I can't even fathom how many people you've recorded. And, oh, my gosh, it's just too much to anyway, your legacy, Oprah, Maya Angelou had always said to Oprah, your legacy is every life you touch. And it's so true. I mean, I can't even imagine between the people that you help record songs and collaborate with on songs and produce your own music, and then all the people that listen to all of the different songs that you've produced and created. It's just amazing. Anyway,
I don't think in those terms, but I do think in terms of that every time someone walks in the studio, and that's Monday through Friday, unless I'm on tour and working on something else, I think of it as their legacy, and their grandkids and great-grandkids are going to hear that song. And it's important to me that it's just as good as it can be. And it doesn't matter if it's a good song or a bad song. I mean, you haven't heard some of the songs I've had to work on where they were just, they probably shouldn't have been in here. You know, some old lady that had a song about her garbage can or something, and I'm thinking, I want to make this really nice for her because somebody else is just going to take her money and not make it good. And
right.
And make sure that she gets the best song about a garbage can she could ever have, you know?
You're so funny. Okay, let's see. Looking for Fond Farewell. It's right here. Okay, I'm going to play that next, Fond Farewell, and it's 4.5 minutes, and then we'll talk some more after that.
Sounds good.
It's what you get when you barely try.
Robert, that song definitely does have a real three feel to it. And
yeah, and it's also some of the timing's in 7. It's not in 4/4, like an even 4 beats where you could dance to it or tap your foot. It's in 7, and one of my challenges was to make that progressive like in 7, but still keep it palatable and make you follow it. You know, Rush was really good at doing that. You never thought of it as being weird time signatures and stuff. And I think that has come across because if it felt odd, people wouldn't have liked it, you know, the people that aren't in the totally progressive music. So I'm pretty pleased with the comments on that one.
Well, you know, progressive music has still always been kind of something that I always thought of it as more like classical rock or something, you know, where it's really... It kind of combines classical, the beauty of classical music with rock, and it's more complex than your regular pop rock songs and things like that.
Yeah.
I think they all have a place, though, you know, I mean, in life, and everybody has different tastes, and even at different times in your life, you have different tastes in music or songs that you want to listen to. And I remember hearing one time, and this is so true, I found this so true, you have to listen to music that is similar to where you are on the emotional scale. Like if you're feeling really, really sad, you need to listen to the sadder songs and then work your way up to the happier songs. So, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, that song, though, is so beautiful, and I'm glad you explained it about the kindness before, because even listening to it again and knowing that, I didn't really get that, but it's definitely what we need right now. We need kindness.
Yeah, it's you know, I talk about the things that our parents knew, basically, you know, the I'm trying to think of what the exact words were. It's the strength that my father knew. You know, they were proud and they took care of business. They treated people right. And
right.
We have a lot of scoundrels running around now. But, you know, I actually cut those people out of my life. If someone is really negative and I don't think they treat people right, I hate to say it, but they just can't be in my world.
They can't be in mine either, Robert.
Yeah, they have to earn the right to be there, and not that I'm anybody special that, you know, gets to say this or that, but I want people to be kind. That's the bottom line. I am not an aggressive person. I don't like confrontation, and I like people that are sociable and kind. That's the only way I could put it, you know?
Well, you know, the thing is kindness is a choice. It's a choice that people can make. So when you cut somebody out of your life because they don't value kindness, and we do, that's a choice they're making, is to be that way, and they can hang around with people who are unkind if they want. But our world needs kindness, and you're right. I mean, I miss that so much about the way the world used to be, and hopefully it can be that way again for our children and for their children and everybody's children. Have a kind and a loving, kind and creative world. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we've got 3 minutes left, so what's something really that you really want to say before we run out of time?
Well, I do hope that people like this album and realize that, you know, to me it's a fulfillment of a dream of mine to do what Keith and I set out to do with the Revitalizing Three, and the music itself and what it's all about. You know, I always said I only could finish it because I have the same type of instruments. I have the Moog, I have the Oasis keyboard, I have the drums, I have all the things here at the studio that Three would have used on the initial album, plus a lot of new stuff like Pro Tools that wasn't around back in 1988.
Yeah,
I just hope that it is a thing that people realize it was important to me, that it was important to Keith and Carl on the first album, and that it's complete, and I'm hoping that they like it. You know, that's always the worry when you put something out. I'm sure when you put your book out, you're thinking, oh, I hope people like it, you know.
Yeah.
We have to, you know. We have to. We can't just be totally sure that we're doing all the right things, right? We have to have a little doubt there to keep
true.
The edge going.
That's true, and the thing is, though, is that it's... Speaking of rules, you know, if people have a rule that everybody has to agree with them, they're going to be unhappy all the time, you know, or if they expect everybody to like something. You know, Wayne Dyer used to say a landslide is like when you get 51% of the people to like you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I really love your music, and I know there's a lot of people out there that do. Get out and pre-order this album, everyone, 3.2 Third Impression. And they can go to your website, robertberry.com, to find out more and to get links for videos and interviews and all sorts of things there. So,
yeah, there's a history of how lucky I've been to work with all these people. It's on there somewhere.
Yeah, it's all on there somewhere. Oh, Robert. Once again, we're almost finished with another show, and I really, really appreciate you being on the show again. I know you're doing a lot of interviews, and so I always really treasure the time that you give to me and to my listeners. So thank you.
I appreciate it, and say hi to Dudley for me, and the album... I think I actually might get a copy before the day before that it's released. Last time it was 2 weeks after that it was released. Everybody had their copies before me, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say hi to Xander for you, too. It's the 12th. It's coming out, so, you know, I pre-ordered it, so hopefully we'll have ours really soon. Thank you again.
You'll probably get it before me.
Yeah. Thank you again. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do for us and for everyone in the world.
Well, I appreciate your help with the album, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
Oh, yeah. We will talk again soon.
All right.
Bye for now, everyone.
See you later.
Live your music.
Bye-bye.
Bye.